Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Nice organizing win for machinists in New York and San Francisco. How does $22 million in back wages sound? Today on the show, we check in with the American Federation of Government Employees, and we talk to a researcher about achieving diversity in the building trades. Welcome to the Wednesday, May 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. This being the third Wednesday of the month, that means it goes to the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org is their national website. Longtime supporter and sponsor of America's Workforce. Joining us today is Lori Glicker. She is the Executive Vice President of Local 3283, which is based in Cleveland, Ohio, represents many in the Defense Finance Agency. And two things we're going to talk about. Anybody that's working in the government is focused primarily on Washington and the talks right now dealing with the debt ceiling. And AFGE has been very vocal over the last couple of months. In fact, right on their national website, they talk about the possibility of budget cuts, which could mean very long lines at airports, offices close, layoffs. And think about this. Summer travel, especially in the airline industry, is going to explode in a couple of weeks. I mean, really, really explode. You don't want to make all those people mad. But right now, these talks are going down to the wire. June 1st is the deadline, according to the Treasury Secretary, that they have to come up with some resolve. But right now, here's what the discussion is all about. The Social Security Administration, for one, would need to close field offices, reduce opening hours, increase waiting times for disability decisions by a whopping 30%. The TSA, Transportation Security Administration, which screens more than 2 million passengers per day, would have to furlough frontline staff. Agriculture Department would have to furlough between 400 and 1,800 food inspectors, depending on the size of the cuts. That's pretty scary in itself. It's all scary. The Railroad Administration would be forced to lay off at least 175 personnel, including 75 railroad safety inspectors, at a time when the public, especially in the state of Ohio, hello, East Palestine, is rightfully demanding more rail safety and not less. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So we'll touch on that. We're also going to get into artificial intelligence. And fortunately, Congress is finally delving into this. There's many saying, you know what, when social media happened and exploded, we didn't do anything. We didn't regulate it. We're sorry that we didn't regulate it. Well, now they're taking a look at AI, artificial intelligence, and some of these tools can now create cloned human voices, hyper-realistic images, videos, audio, in seconds, at a very, very minimal cost. And according to some of the reports, when you take this and they're strapped to social media algorithms, you're creating fake news. I mean, the news is questionable now. But this content can spread far and fast and change people's mind, mislead voters, impersonate candidates, undermine elections. So obviously, this conversation is really taking off right now. Lori's going to give us her point of view on that. So she'll be our first guest. Later in the show, we're going to go to Amy Tracy Wells. Now, Amy is a PhD, and she's a part-time lecturer of labor studies and employment relations at Rutgers. and she's been teaching undergraduate courses for the School of Management and Labor Relations for over 10 years. She's also consulted with the Michigan Joint Apprenticeship Program, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 25, as well as the National Rural Letter Carriers Association. Amy is primarily interested in the effects of social and economic valuation and non-valuation of unpaid labor. That's a whole show in itself. And she typically teaches working women in American society at Rutgers. Well, Amy is one of four authors of a report which came out last year. This was commissioned by the North American Building Trades Unions, better known as NABTU. And they did this in partnership with the Institute for Construction Employment Research. And what they wanted to take a look at was diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in the construction trades. They covered union programs, non-union programs, and registered apprenticeship programs. Well, in the union programs, they found that there's many successful and fully develop diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in the union sector, from pre-apprenticeship programs to those new to the trades to policies supporting experienced journey workers. And they found that community organizations were very important in helping identify, recruit, and support interested workers from historically underrepresented groups. We've talked about this on the show many times. Then you take a look at the non-union diversity, equity, inclusion programs, and, you know, yeah, they are involved, but the study said that they're best described as efforts to achieve diversity, but not programs. And they found that the initiatives in the non-union sector are generally less developed when it comes to employee retention and promotion. No surprise there. And lastly, you got the registered apprenticeship programs, and they had some numbers on this too, which we've talked about on the show. According to the study, women made up about 4.8% of all union apprenticeships. This goes back to 2019. And it was half that in non-union apprenticeship programs. The same year, 9.6% of union apprenticeships were black workers. And here's a big explosion. Hispanics, almost 30% Latino workers. For non-union apprentices, the numbers fell to 7.9% for blacks, 22% for Latinos. So we'll take a look at all of this with our second guest on the show. And I have to salute NABTU for what they're trying to do on this, because they made a bold effort here. They spent a lot of money to try to take a look at this issue. Well, number one, they're really targeting those underserved communities because they need the workers. They really need the workers. And we always say this is the pathway to the middle class. So get involved in the trades. This is perfect, too, because this is National Infrastructure Week. And I mentioned this on the show the other day. In the first 1.5 years since that law was enacted, the Biden administration has announced $220 billion in funding, covering more than 32,000 projects in every state. And let me give you an example. We base this show in northeastern Ohio, and there's a lot of travel in Cleveland Hopkins International Airport, which needs some work. Been through that airport many, many times. Well, listen to this. The Department of Transportation has awarded over $22 million for Cleveland Hopkins International Airport from the Airport Infrastructure Grant, as well as $3.2 million from the airport terminal program. Now, the funds will go toward the rehabilitation of the public transportation tunnel from downtown Cleveland to the airport terminal building. This includes rehabbing wall surfaces, replacing tunnel ceilings, and waterproofing the tramway membrane. The project will also include renovations to 13 of the airport restrooms. Now, that's one example. There's a lot of them out there. But hats off to the Biden administration for, as I often say, moving the needle forward and making sure we get things done and at the same time create a lot of jobs. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You could find more at boydwatterson.com. Well, employees at Sonetta, which is an international design firm, have filed a petition to unionize with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. That firm has approximately 90 employees in New York and in San Francisco. Now, if they succeed, Sonetta will be only the second private architecture firm in the country to have a union in almost 100 years. How about that? The petition comes a year and a half after employees at Shop Architects, which is a very prominent firm with about 135 employees, filed a petition to unionize. The petition was withdrawn following a powerful anti-union campaign. Well, while the unionization effort failed, it sparked a wave of similar efforts. In September of last year, Bernheimer Architecture, which is a 22-person Brooklyn-based firm, decided to go union. Now, while the architecture industry is known for long hours and low pay, the motivation for unionizing at Sonetta is not to improve poor working conditions, but to ensure the continuity of current, better-than-industry standard conditions. Good news there. Hats off to the machinists on that one. How about this? A federal jury ordered the East Penn Manufacturing Company, which is one of the largest battery manufacturers in the world, to pay over $22 million in back wages to its employees. The court found the company guilty of not paying workers for the time required to change into protective clothing and shower. The verdict marks the largest settlement ever under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The lawsuit was filed by the U.S. Department of Labor. This goes back to 2018, alleging that the company typically paid workers only for their scheduled 8-hour shifts, not accounting for the time that employees spent on essential safety measures. Then there's Goldman Sachs. They agreed to a $215 million settlement. This would be in a gender discrimination class action lawsuit. The plaintiffs had alleged that the companies had systematically discriminated against thousands of female employees. They had argued that the company's performance review process favored men and led to disparities in promotion opportunities as well as pay. Now, the settlement will be divided among 2,800 class members for a total payout of $47,000 per member. That's still pretty good. I mean, you think about the $215 million, but there's a lot of people that got screwed on this one. So $47,000? Okay, I'll take it. Company also agreed to change its career advancement procedures and to hire independent experts who will study its performance review process and conduct pay equity studies for the next 3 years. Hopefully that'll continue longer than that. And then there's the New York City Council. They passed a bill that would ban discrimination based on height or weight. The bill would make height and weight a protected class in the city's human rights law, which bans discrimination in employment, housing, and places of public accommodation. It includes an exception for employers who consider height or weight when the decision is based in bona fide occupational qualifications. Now, mind you, a few other cities ban weight discrimination. Michigan is the only state to ban discrimination based specifically on weight, although the New Jersey and New York state legislatures are considering similar bills. That bill, by the way, now goes to New York City Mayor Eric Adams to sign. Mayor Adams told reporters, this was back in April, that he supported the bill's intent, but was still looking into the details. You know, we say the devil's in the details. All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to check in with Lori Glicker, Lori is the Executive Vice President of AFGE Local 3283. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-Union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter or do both. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. ulagency.org is a website you want to go to. Let's go to line number one and welcome back to the show, Lori Glicker. Lori is retired from the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, better known as DFAS, which is located in Cleveland, Ohio. That's local 3283. They have about 2,100 members. And I got to salute National here because this is posted on AFGE.org. The union is inching closer to their goal of reaching 290,000 members by the end of this year. April membership was at 285,516. April saw AFGE's leaders and activists achieving a significant milestone, a net increase of 1,000 members 2 months in a row, back-to-back growth. And that hasn't happened since 2016. The last time they had a net increase of 1,000 members 5 months in a row was in 2015. Got a comment here from National President Everett Kelly. The success was not by chance. It's the result of our members' unwavering dedication to organizing for worker power, culminating in the union's best April since 2015. He goes on to say these organizing efforts include holding new employee orientations to introduce the union to new hires, having one-on-one conversations with coworkers about why being a union member matters, and taking advantage of President Biden's policies promoting union organizing. Well, I'll tell you, it comes right from the top. You didn't see this in the previous administration, no doubt. Hey, Lori Glicker, good news for AFGE National and 2,100 for your union. Is that pretty steady? Are we growing in Cleveland, Ohio as well? What's the numbers on that?
We are growing. Our membership is over 700 union members, and it grows every time we have a new employee orientation. We have a great organizing team that gets a 30 minutes every time that we have this orientation, and we are able to bring in the members, and so we are growing just as well.
So, Lori, just to be clear, 2,100 members in Cleveland, Ohio, but you said 700 are actually in 3283. Did I hear that correctly?
That is correct.
Okay, good, good, good. But we're still growing. That's a good
absolutely.
Sign there. Okay, now for the bad news here. We're running out of money, according to many in Washington. This debt ceiling, those talks are, I know, at a fever pitch right now. And I read a couple of things from your national website about what can happen. I'd like to get your perspective. I'm sure there's a lot of people pretty nervous, especially at 3283 right now, right?
Well, everybody's concerned, you know. As our salaries are, you know, we have our salaries set for the 2023. But if you're talking mortgage rates going up, the possibility of insurance in 2024 going up, and our salaries, you know, not going up to what it should be, everybody is concerned of what this, if they do not pass the Debt Ceiling Act, what it could create for our benefits, for the outside programs. You know, we're aware of, like some of our retired members, even though they get a retirement, they still get Social Security, and what it could affect their social, how it could affect their Social Security, along with their borrowing power when they go to the banks for home loans, personal expenses, things like that, that our employees are concerned of what this could mean, especially with our, again, like I say, our salaries not going up.
Now, with the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, better known as DFAS, now, don't they handle a lot of payroll? I mean, could they be shut down as a result of this?
I do not think, we do not plan on that happening at this point, because we pay VA, Veterans Administration, we pay certain agencies that are, even though they may be affected, we still have employees that need to be paid. And so I don't think we see that happening at this point. Down the road, I couldn't say. It depends on how bad it gets. But at this point, I don't foresee it happening.
Yeah. Well, we're just weeks away. The deadline that everybody's talking about is June 1st. And I don't know what, I know Biden's got a team of people trying to work something out here. The problem with this, these are bills that need to be paid. And this is an effort by obviously the other party to try to trim the budget. But where they're trimming is the scary part. And I was reading earlier, Social Security would have to close field offices. Waiting times for disability decisions could be affected. TSA, and I know you got a lot of members in TSA, which screens more than 2 million passengers per day, would have to furlough frontline staff. You know what that's going to mean. I mean, the airports, and they're talking about a busy summer travel season. Airports are going to be a cluster. Let me put it that way. In your opinion, though, now I'm just wondering, are these just scare tactics right now? Is this information sinking into your members right now?
Yes, it is, because we have a lot of members, especially our TSA people, because, you know, they're always one of the first, because they're the last ones to get a union contract with their management. You know, they're always concerned, especially a lot of them have, as you say, so much foot traffic in the airport, but yet they're not hiring personnel, that these employees are getting burned out from working double shifts, for having to deal with, you know, unruly passengers and no increase in money, but yet you're being worked even more than what the normal employee would normally work, you know, an 8-to-5 shift or an 8 to even 6:30 shift. They are working extra hard. And as for Social Security, field offices really started closing up during the pandemic also. And a lot of them did not rebound back because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So it would definitely keep affecting, because it's more cost effective if everything is done online versus someone having to man an office and rent office space.
Lori, I want to read a statement here from your national president, Everett Kelly. I mentioned him just a couple of minutes ago. He said that deficits are not the result of growth in federal agencies or employment. Federal civilian employment remains less than it was in the 1960s. That's a fact. Although the U.S. population has nearly doubled. Okay. And everybody says, oh, there's too many government workers. No, that's not the case. That's a lie. He goes on to say that federal workers have continued to maintain public safety and provide public service throughout the pandemic, as you pointed out, even as their wages have lagged behind inflation and continue to trail the private sector. AFGE is asking members of Congress to support an immediate increase in the debt ceiling to avoid default and pay for the projects that they have already approved. So with that being said, are your members mobilized, calling members of Congress, especially those that... That there are some, you know this, Lori, there are some that want us to default. You know that.
Absolutely. They would rather give it to a private contractor than have, say that they are, their work is being handled by a government employee. But there's nothing more loyal than a government employee who is every day working hard, as you said, to maintain the safety, our police officers, our firefighters, on a lot of these installations. There is no one harder working than a government employee. And so, yes, you are correct. The employees are not growing as they should be, but we're working very hard to maintain the level of expertise that is required or needed for our customers.
Lori Glicker joining us on our live line today. She is the executive vice president of AFGE Local 3283 in Cleveland, Ohio. And that local represents DFAS, Defense Finance Accounting Services. There's about 2,100 people in DFAS, 700 of them at Local 3283. We'll continue with Lori. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence. Good news, bad news about that. It's a new technology, but it's scaring a whole lot of people. And should it be regulated? Many say yes. Later in the show, we're going to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. NABTU, the North American Building Trades, did a study on this last year, and we're going to talk to one of the researchers. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up to receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. In fact, we had Melissa Cropper on the show yesterday, president of the Ohio Federation. If you missed it, just go to awfpodcast.com. Everything's archived there. Let's go back and rejoin Lori Glicker. Lori is with the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 3283, based in Cleveland, Ohio. Lori, I know you mentioned the police officers that AFGE represents in the first segment. I want to point out that this week is National Police Week, and AFGE is proud to represent tens of thousands of law enforcement officers within the federal and D.C. governments. This is all posted on afge.org. And they took a look at three police officers. One of them is Tom Petoskey at the Department of Veteran Affairs. There's Stephen Booth at the Department of Defense. And Yolanda Kent. Yolanda works at Court Services and the Offender Supervision Agency. So you can read all about them at afge.org. All right, Lori, I want to talk about artificial intelligence. In fact, there was a hearing yesterday on Capitol Hill about this, and one of the people that's responsible for creating AI, artificial intelligence, he too is scared about what is happening and what could happen. I mean, it's amazing. It's scary. We're creating things that could be really bad. I mean, that's the bottom line. Now, you are privy to what's going on, especially at Local 3283, and it's already being integrated in the workplace. Can you explain what's going on right now, Lori?
Well, artificial intelligence, which is what is called bots for us, are being introduced into various departments to free up the employees. But ultimately, the bots have the potential of replacing employees, because as they get more sophisticated, they can actually do some of the positions that employees do. And then there would be no longer any need for an employee, an actual body, when they can use artificial intelligence. And that's a concern that this is overtaking various departments, with the possibility of it going across to all the DFAS sites, because all of our sites have bots being introduced to them. Artificial intelligence in their department. And our concern is that as the bot becomes more sophisticated, our employees will no longer have positions in several years from now, and it will not be replaced with a actual body. It'll be replaced with a robot. A robotics intelligence.
Lori, do we have any indication how this is going to affect the workforce? Do we have any data? I mean, we're at the early stages right now, but I'm just wondering. It's already being implemented, as you pointed out. I'm just wondering, are we looking at 10, 20, 30%, perhaps a job cut? Has AFGE looked into this to find out what may happen?
Yes, we have. We are looking into it. We are doing everything in our power. We understand that artificial intelligence is here. We know companies, all companies are using artificial intelligence. What we're trying to do is, we understand artificial intelligence can be a plus to do menial aspects of the job, but we don't want to lose the expertise of our employees with their knowledge base and have it replaced with an artificial intelligence. And yes, our Council 171, who represents all the DFAS sites, we are working wholeheartedly with management to make sure that our employees are not going to wake up one day and find they don't have a position. Do we know what's going to happen in the future? Absolutely not. But we are doing everything to guarantee the positions of our employees, the jobs of our employees. But we also are aware that down the road, management may look at just abolishing those positions and replacing them with artificial intelligence.
We talked about the Hollywood writers' strike. I know they're striking because, well, for various reasons, but artificial intelligence is one of them, because artificial intelligence might replace them as a writer. And the scenarios are amazing. Automated robocall messages. And it, imagine this in the political arena, Lori, in a candidate's voice, instructing voters to cast ballots on the wrong date. Audio recordings of a candidate supposedly confessing to a crime or expressing racist views, video footage showing someone giving a speech or interview they never gave. And then there's fake images. I mean, there's plenty of those on the internet right now, but fake images designed to look like local newsprints, falsely claiming a candidate dropped out of the race. I mean, it's boundless right now. It really is. And you mentioned job cuts. It's just a really scary future here. I am just glad, because at the hearings yesterday, the takeaway was that we've got to regulate this. This is a runaway freight train right now. We're creating something that could be very, very dangerous in so many different ways. It's going to help in some aspects, but it's dangerous at the same time. So I'm glad that your union and all unions have to be really, really focused on this right now. It's a scary time. But in the meantime, I'm going to let you get back, because you got more organizing to do. You're on a roll here. Again, those of you listening, AFGE is inching toward their goal of reaching 290,000 members by the end of this year. And they're very, very close, less than 5,000 away. And if for the last couple of months, any indication, they should be achieving that perhaps before the end of 2023. So, Lori, you stay safe. Stay strong, stay in touch, and keep up the great work at Local 3283, okay?
Thank you, Flash, and you have a wonderful day now.
Okay, afge.org for more information. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, diversity, equity, and inclusion in the trades. We're going to dissect a study put together by the North American Building Trades. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this portion of America's Workforce, sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So, do this. Go to imed.com/union and you will learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go to line number two right now. Welcome a newcomer to the show. We spent a lot of time talking about this study, which was commissioned last year by the North American Building Trades Unions, titled Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Initiatives in the Construction Trades. And joining us right now from Rutgers University, yeah, she was one of the strikers a couple of weeks ago, Amy Tracy Wells. Amy has been teaching undergraduate courses at the School of Management and Labor Relations at Rutgers since 2012. She's also consulted with the Michigan Joint Apprenticeship and Training Committees, JATC, American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, that would be Council 25, and also the National Rural Letter Carriers Association. And with a union background like that, she belongs on America's Workforce, and she's going to talk about the study. Amy, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. And I see you were one of four authors. There were also two editors on this study. Talk to me about this. Did the North American Building Trades, did they say, well, we got to put this report together? They contacted you and others. Was this like a joint effort? And maybe you could get into some of the particulars. I want to get into, you know, union, non-union, the differences and all that. But how did it evolve? Can you address that first?
Sure. So NABTU reached out to the Institute for Construction Employment Research, which is typically just referred to as I-Series, which is out of Michigan State University, and asked for this particular report. I-Series contacted me and asked me to provide, to write one of the chapters. And along with the other authors, we completed three chapters attempting to examine the U.S. construction industry, both union, non-union, and there's a quantitative component that looks at the data on apprenticeship programs from 1999 through 2019.
So I'm reading that you pretty much wrote chapter one. So let's start right there. What's in chapter one? Go ahead.
So it focuses on, it's a qualitative analysis of programs supported by or affiliated with the union construction sector to recruit, train, and employ workers from historically underrepresented groups. The excellent news is that I looked at 20 different DEI initiatives, programs, demonstrating different models. And what was clear is that these programs were successful on a range of levels. That is, they were looking at primarily pre-apprenticeship, but they also looked at apprenticeship and journey worker levels. So there are many different strategies out there that are successfully demonstrated to increase diversity. The work is all very deliberative. It requires partnerships with community-based organizations, industry leaders, government agencies, et cetera. But it identifies components in each program that highlight a degree of overlap for successfully diversifying the construction industry.
So, Amy, if you don't mind, I guess the takeaway in this part of the report was the fact that community organizations were very, very important when it came to union DEI programs. Can you speak to that?
Correct. They were at the local level, regional level, and the national level.
I see. Okay. Now, what was the takeaway on this when it comes to union programs? Was it because primarily of the outreach that the unions did to make sure that they included diversity, equity, inclusion, and all that? Can you give us some more details on that?
Sure. So it's more than initial contact, if you will. So you have to identify workers. You have to identify individuals within the community that best fit programmatic needs. So that's where the role of community-based organizations, for example, come in. However, it's not enough just to recruit. Many individuals require some support in order to get into the pre-apprenticeship programs. They may have trouble with transportation. They may have issues with regards to housing. They may need case management, et cetera. And then once they're in a pre-apprenticeship program, more deliberate actions are required at the apprenticeship and at the journey worker level to train and retain these workers.
Okay, so they put a lot of efforts in that. Now, you contrast this. I saw in Chapter 2. Now, I know you didn't write Chapter 2, but what I noticed in the report that, yeah, they're involved in diversity, equity, inclusion in the non-union sector. They're making some headway, but they're not working hard enough. And what was glaring was these were efforts and not programs. So maybe they say, well, we're going to do this. We're going to try to do this. But they didn't have anything concrete that they could follow, right?
Yes. The efforts were more as a result of individuals within the organization that they saw this as a responsive to a community need that would garner goodwill within the community. They were trying to be responsive to, say, a contract that had a DEI component to it. They were responding to membership organizations that had a DEI component, but there weren't formal programs that were developed as they are in the programs that I was able to highlight. That is the union-based programs.
Yeah. You know, I know retention is a big issue and across the board, union and non-union, but it seems when it comes into the non-union sector, and I was reading this, that they're generally less developed when it comes to employee retention and promotion. Retaining employees in the non-union sector has long been a challenge, and it appears to represent an obstacle to create effective DEI strategies in these areas. So the unions, when it comes to keeping the workers, the unions are doing a better job then, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Let's get into the registered apprenticeship programs, if you will. And we're talking 75% of all construction apprenticeship registrations between 1999 and 2019. I mean, we're talking a 20-year period. Let's go to the registered apprenticeship programs. And we're talking 75% of all construction apprenticeship registrations between 1999 and 2019. So we're 20-year period here. Very comprehensive study here. And Amy Wells is joining us on behalf of Rutgers University on this. So talk to me about the results here. Some of the takeaways, maybe we could start with Latinos, Hispanics. I mean, big boost here, right?
Correct. There has been a tremendous growth in the Hispanic share of the construction industry. So in 1999, the numbers were around 9%, whereas in 2019, they were at some 24%. So there's variation between the union and non-union sector, but the trend is similar in the non-union sector. So that's fabulous news, of course. There's a slight nuance to it in that the Hispanic proportion is in the lower skilled trades, but certainly the numbers are rising.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about women in the trades. And I know NABTU is very focused on this. We've done several shows with the Trades Women Build Nations conferences that have been going on for a number of years. Now, what I don't like, apparently, the study points out that women's average shares in the union and non-union workforce between that time period, again, from 1999 to 2019, were just 2 and 2.2%. What's going on here, Amy? You got any results?
Yes, so that's correct, and it's certainly not where the number should be. I'm glad you gave a shout out to the Trade Women's Built Nations, because that's been very significant for supporting retention within the trades. So, you know, as we note in this paper, in 1965, President Johnson signed the EO 11246, and that prohibited employment discrimination, and in 67 amended it to prohibit sex discrimination. More lately, it was amended again to prohibit gender and gender identity discrimination. However, the percentage of women in the trades has remained historically low. There are a variety of factors in that. Some of them are about early finding quality, early start child care programs. However, the Institute for Women's Policy Research conducted a survey of over 2,600 tradeswomen and non-binary tradespeople. And unfortunately, and this is certainly borne out anecdotally, that that harassment, sexual harassment, racial harassment, and sexual orientation harassment is significant for women in the trades. There can be some other components as well, which is what I found.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, women, so you're not, you have to maintain, you have to closely monitor work hours, overtime, job training, and job placement on sites as well to try for equality across the construction work site.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. There's no doubt about it. But the bottom line is there's certainly more diversity, equity, and inclusion when it comes to the union building trades. I mean, that's the major takeaway on all of this. So we just got to keep moving the needle in the right direction. So, Amy Tracy Wells, thank you for joining us today. What's the next step? Are they going to do some more research, to your knowledge? Are they going to continue to take a look at this issue?
I'm sure that NABTU will. How it involves I-Series, I can't say.
Yeah. We'll see what happens here. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate the input on all this, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road, okay?
Thank you so much, Ed. It was a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure's all mine. All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to check in with the Texas AFL-CIO and the North Coast Labor Federation. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.